Chapter 16 1 Turl sat in his dark hole and was gloomy. He was not with the other cyclos. They would have torn him to fur fluffs. He was here in a cubicle that had once been used for cleaning supplies on the dormitories. It had been rigged with a breathe gas circulator. It contained a narrow 12-foot-long bed. There was a little port that had been rigged to push food through. One could see the outside corridor beyond its revolving panes. And there was a two-way intercom inset below the door. The place was strong enough. He had already tried every means of opening it and escaping. He was not chained, but every hour of the day and night, there was a sentry with an assault rifle just outside. It was really the fault of the females, both the animal females and Chirk. His hindsight was a bit faulty, but not his conviction that it was correct. Always a master of self-delusion, Turl was at his best these days. When he compared his present lot with the beautiful dream of being wealthy and powerful on Cyclo, being bowed to by the royalty and trembled at by everyone else, he quivered with suppressed rage. These animals were denying him his due. 10 beautiful gold coffin lids lay moldering in the company cemetery on Cyclo. Of that he was utterly certain. The delicious thought of slipping out there some dark night and exhuming them was second only to the thought of the wealth and power that would ensue. He had befriended these animals. And how had they treated him? A mop closet. But Turl was nothing if not clever. He roused himself now and began to think hard and brightly. Now was the time to be the calm, cool, masterful Turl. He would get to Cyclo. He would get these animals and this planet destroyed, finally and forever. He would dig up those coffins. He would be bowed to and trembled at. Nothing must stand in his way. He began to tally up the bits and scraps of leverage he had. First, of course, it went without saying that his own cleverness was his chief asset. He agreed with himself on that. Second, he was almost certain the first animal he had caught had forgotten that there was a hefty charge of explosive left buried in that cage. Third, there had been 3 remotes. One was still in his office. One had been seized. But the third was just inside that cage door in case he somehow got tricked or trapped in there. That third one would have enabled him to blow up the females or shut off the power to the bars, and he was certain it had not been found. The fourth piece of leverage was a pretty big one, and the fifth was gigantic. Leverage. Sitting there in the semi-dark, he thought and thought. And after several days, he knew he had it. Every point in its torturous pattern of events was perfectly channeled, perfectly conceived, and ready to be put in train. The primary stage was to get himself put in that cage. Good. He would do it. So it was that a very mild, personable Turl noted one morning that the sentries no longer wore kilts. Gazing out through the revolving panes of the food slot, he carefully concealed his elation. He sized the creature up. It had long pants, strapped boots, and a half-wing insignia on its left breast. Turl might be a top graduate of company schools, but he was no linguist. That was part of the arts. And what self-respecting cyclo had anything to do with those? So an element of luck had to enter in here. What, said Turl in cyclo through the intercom installed in the door, does that half-wing stand for? The sentry looked a bit startled. Good, thought Turl. I should have thought it would have 2 wings, said Turl.
That's for a full pilot, said the sentry. I'm just a student pilot, but I'll have my full wings some day.
Turl laid aside his conviction that you couldn't understand animals. While arrogance demanded non-recognition of them, necessity demanded he recognize them. This thing was talking Cyclo, Chinko accent, as would be expected, but Cyclo.
I am sure you will earn your wings, said Turl. I must say your Cyclo is excellent. You should practice it more, though. Talking to a real Cyclo would help.
The sentry brightened up. Suddenly he realized that that was perfectly true, and here was a real cyclo. He had never talked to one before. It was quite a novelty. So he told Turl who he was, that being easy to discuss. He said he was Lars Thorensen, part of the Swedish contingent that had arrived some months ago for pilot training. He did not share the ferocity of some of the Scots against the Cyclos, for his people, way up in the Arctic, hadn't had any previous contact with Cyclos. He thought maybe the Scots exaggerated things a bit. And by the way, was Turl a flyer?
Oh yes, Turl told him. And it was quite true.
Turl was a past master in all types of flight, battle tactics, and stunts like flying right down into 5-mile-deep mine shafts and picking up an endangered machine. The sentry had drawn closer. Flight was very dear to him, and here was a master. He said that their best flyer was Johnny, and did Turl know him?
Oh yes, Turl not only knew him, but back in the old days, before there had been a misunderstanding, he himself had taught that one a few tricks. It was why he was such a good flyer. A very fine creature, actually.
Turl had been his firmest friend. Turl was elated. These were cadet sentries, standing watches in addition to their schooling to ease the considerable load on regular personnel. For several days each morning, Lars Thorensen improved his cyclo and learned the ins and outs of combat flying. From a master and a one-time friend of Johnny's, he was quite unaware that if he put some of these tricks into use, he would lose the most elementary fight in the air, and later others would have to shake the nonsense out of him before he got himself killed. Turl knew it was a risk to play this trick, but he just couldn't resist it. Turl corrected the sentry's cyclo up to a point, and then one morning he said to himself he would have to exactly clarify certain words, and really they should have a dictionary. There were lots of dictionaries, and so the next morning the sentry gave him one. With considerable glee, Turl went to work with the dictionary when the sentry was off duty. There were a lot of words in the composite language called cyclo that were never actually used by cyclos. They had leaked into the language from Chinko and other tongues. Cyclos never used them because they could not really grasp their conceptual meaning. So Turl looked up words and phrases like atone for wrongs, guilt, restitution, personal fault, pity, cruelty, just, and amends. He knew they existed as words and that alien races used them. It was a very, very hard job, and later he would look on this as the toughest part of his whole project. It was all so foreign, so utterly alien. Soon, Turl was satisfied he was ready to enter his next stage.
You know, he said to the sentry one morning, I feel very guilty about putting your poor Johnny in a cage. Actually, I have a craving to atone for my wrongs. It was my personal fault that he was subjected to such cruelty, and I wish with all my heart to make amends. I am overwhelmed by guilt, and I pity him for what I did. And it would be only just if I made restitution for it all by suffering in a cage like he did.
It made Turl perspire to get it all out, but that only added to his contrite look. The sentry had made a habit of recording their conversations, for he studied them later and corrected his own pronunciation. And since he had never heard a lot of these words in cyclo before, he was glad he had it all on disc. Turl was also glad. It had been an agonizing performance. The sentry, having the evening free, digested all this. He decided he had better report it to the compound commanding officer. There was a new compound commander, an Argyle, very well noted for his prowess in raids in earlier days, and very experienced, but not in America. The ease with which a radiation bullet could blow up a cyclo had given him a bit of contempt for them in their current state. And he had a problem of his own. Literal mobs of people from all over the world got off planes and took tours of the compound. The coordinators showed them around and pointed out where this had happened and that had happened. Many-hued and many-tongued, they were a bit of a nuisance, and almost every one of them wanted to be shown a cyclo. Most had never seen one, no matter that they had been oppressed by them for ages. Some very important chiefs and dignitaries had enough whip with the council to get special permission. That meant an extra detail of guards the commander did not have. It meant taking people down into the dormitory levels where they should not be. It actually meant a bit of danger to them, for some of those cyclos down there were not reconstructed. So the commander toyed with this idea. He went out and looked at the cage. Evidently, it could be wired. In fact, it was wired, with plenty of voltage to the bars. If one put up a protector in front so people would not touch the bars and get hurt, he would be relieved of these nonsense tours into the dormitory. Further, it appealed to him to have a monkey in a cage. It would help morale. And it would be an added attraction. He could plainly see that somebody might want to make restitution and do amends. So he mentioned it sketchily to a council meeting. They were very busy and had their minds on other things, and he omitted to tell them it was Turo. Technicians checked to make sure the cage wiring was live and could be shut off easily from the outside where the connections and box had been fastened to a pole, and that a barrier was erected to keep people from electrocuting themselves. It was a very elated, but carefully downcast, Turl, who was then escorted under heavy guard and put in Johnny's and the girl's old cage.
"Ah, the sky again," said Turl.
He hated the blue sky of Earth like poison gas.
"But I must take no pleasure in it. It is only just that I will be confined here, exposed to public view and ridicule."
He had looked up some new words.
"And mocked. It serves me right."
And so Turl went about his duty very honestly. The crowds came, and he looked ferocious and leaped about, glaring at them through his breathe mask glass, and making little children scream and flinch outside the barricade. He had heard of gorillas, beasts over in Africa, beating their chests, so he beat his chest. It was a real hit. The crowds came, they saw an actual cyclo, they even threw things at him. They had heard that he put Johnny in a collar, and young Lars visited him one day and told him, through the bars, that the crowd wanted to know where his collar was. Turl thought that a great idea. A couple of days later, five guards came in and put a heavy iron collar and chain on Turl and fastened him to the old stake. The compound commander was quite happy about it, but he told the guards that if Turl showed any sign at all of trying to escape, they were to riddle him. Turl's mouth bones wore a private smile as he capered and postured. He rumbled and roared. His plans were working out perfectly. 2. Johnny threw the book from him and pushed away his lunch untouched. The guard at the door looked in through the glass, abruptly alert. Colonel Ivan whirled in an automatic response, combat ready. It had sounded like the thud of a grenade for a moment.
"It makes no sense," said Johnny to himself. "It just makes no sense."
The others, seeing it was no emergency, relaxed. The sentry returned to his usual position, and the colonel went on wiping down the white tile. But Chrissy remained alarmed. It was almost unheard of for Johnny to be irritable, and for days and days now, ever since he had started to do nothing but study books, cyclo books they seemed to be, though she could not read, he had been getting worse and worse. The untouched lunch worried her.